Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Matrix Moments. We have Avnish with us. This time we're going to discuss something which is very topical, something that's getting discussed in a bunch of boardrooms as we speak, as well as sidebar conversations. And Avi and I were chatting and we thought that let's sort of discuss the elephant in the room more openly and talk about corporate governance. Avnish, as we all know, right, the last 18 to 24 months have been like phenomenal for the Indian startup ecosystem. We have seen so many great founders, both first time and repeat startup, so many interesting businesses getting built, companies going public for the first time, so many global investors investing in India for the first time, and so many companies sort of becoming super, super large, right? And which is why you are super bullish and proud of sort of the digital nation building that's happening. Amongst all of that, it seems that corporate governance somehow has not gotten as much amount of importance and focus as it should have been as companies have grown up, right? And we have seen at least now a few instances where probably in large companies, corporate governance practices were not probably up to the mark. So would love to probably begin with why now? Why are we hearing about issues now? Why you have been in this industry for 15 years. Have you seen this in the past or you are hearing this for the first time? And is there a why now to it?
I resent the comment on 15 years because it gives away my age. But thank you for having me, Dada. Appreciate it. And I keep calling him Dada, even though he doesn't want to be called that. So why is it being brought up now? So first of all, corporate governance should not be a topic of discussion. It should be hygiene. And you mentioned that it's being, and you said two things. One, that it's being discussed. And second, that it's the elephant in the room. I actually don't think it's being discussed enough. And I think it's our, and I'm glad, we've been discussing it at Matrix, and I'm glad you came up with this topic. So why now? Because hygiene is something you notice when it's missing, and it's missing. And that's a problem, right? And it's a little bit, we'll come to, you know, how we all feel about this going forward. But that, like you said, the traction of the businesses has been unbelievable. And therefore, one is hoping it's all great, but then we started seeing some of the news. I'll give one other perspective, Dada, which is, look, what is the biggest driver of what's going on in our digital businesses? Net-net, thanks to COVID, thanks to Jio, thanks to GST, UPI, all of that, it is digitization of the economy. Bad behaviors have also got digitized. And that's the problem, right? So we know the well-known tycoons who have run away from the country. I used to joke actually with my industrialist friends that any debt, bank debt on your balance sheet is promoter's equity because they have basically siphoned it off. And so all of that is starting to happen. So we should not be surprised. That doesn't mean that that's okay, that it is happening, right? The other piece I would say, crazy year of value creation brought in some bad behaviors, potentially even at the investors part, which we'll talk about. Net, they got caught, right? There are stakeholders involved. When a company is private, the stakeholders are founder, investor, largely, maybe employees also. But government is also a stakeholder. And actually, this time the government has caught some of them, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the driver of the negativity. Also, because there is a little bit of, you know, when companies are doing well, the digital companies say, "Don't look at our valuations. We are transforming the world."
Yeah.
It comes with a responsibility. You're not transforming if you're going to do the same practices. So I think some of the negativity and shock, including for us, has been that we expected better. But just because we expect better doesn't mean we don't have to put in the checks and balances for what may not work out well, right? So I think that's the net. I will tell you, the narrative is getting mixed up. Corporate governance and fraud are very different things. Fraud is fraud. You know, I've actually noted down the definition. It says wrongful or criminal deception for personal or financial gain. This is the dictionary reputation. Corporate governance is actually how a company is run and for whom, right? So what is happening, sadly, because this is actually not the right way. Fraud should not lead to better corporate governance. corporate governance is something we should aspire to and do it anyway, yeah. not because of something has gone bad or wrong in the market, right? That's where I feel a little bit disappointed and sad, that the right narrative has come because of the wrong trigger, right? So that worries me. Also, just to clarify on that, right? A company with great corporate governance can still have fraud. But a company with fraud, and especially if it's widespread, likely didn't have good corporate governance. So I would like to actually separate these two. I think both are relevant and both are happening, but we should also spend time talking about corporate governance. It's just stepping back, you know, we've just all seen the news that Elon Musk has bought a big stake in Twitter. That is a form of saying I'm not happy with corporate governance, but he's not alleging fraud, right? On the other hand, if you look at Theranos, which was the famous case, that was fraud, right? Because you were misrepresenting for gain what was going on. So I think that's the net, and why is it happening now? We discuss market, companies have become larger, so what didn't used to be material has become material.
Fair point. And I like the distinction between corporate governance and fraud, and most of the things that we'll discuss today is corporate governance, because we have also discussed that companies have grown from 0 to 1 to 1 to 10 to 10 to 100. I don't think, as an ecosystem, we have also figured out what is corporate governance at 10 to 100, right?
Yeah.
I think if you look back at the US, there are a lot of mature companies with best practices in corporate governance already there. India is probably learning, which is why also maybe over the next few years, as we learn through the process, we hope that a lot of best practices globally will come to India. Yeah. So with that perspective, Avnish, what are the best practices have you seen globally, right? Yeah. Global companies, are they founder run, are they board run? I know in India they're SH run, but how should a company be run?
So let's step back for a second. When you said some of the best practices, some of these, you know, quote unquote, activist investors are also coming to India. So in the US, by the way, Carl Icahn's latest tirade is against McDonald's for how they treat pigs. Z had a very public spat with Invesco regarding this merger and stuff like that. There is, you know, tons of literature on the internet that can talk about what's great corporate governance, but we need to apply it in a different context. But let's step back for a second. If you look at the Indian offline world, when did NCLT come in and why did it come in? 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Because all of this, so a lot of stuff was happening. Fraud, bad corporate governance, this, that. So it's hard to necessarily take learnings from just one context. If you look at the large US companies, they were never founder run. In fact, the CEO, chairman may not even own 1% of the company. These are the old days, Coke, Pepsi. Nowadays, you see some of the large companies are founder run.
Yeah.
So a lot of different types of contexts, because in those, you sometimes have questionable corporate governance practices. Founders have super voting shares. Terrible idea for corporate governance, right? But also here we do that now. So if you ask me, there's no black and white answer. I think it is important to keep context in mind. You, like you said, Indian companies are run by founders. Board is meant to be an oversight mechanism, but largely is not. SHA is the oversight mechanism. If you ask me, having been a founder, what kind of company I would run, I would also probably in my initial days like it like that. I don't want too much oversight.
Yeah.
I would say, "Bas, tere ko kya pasa hai, main kya bana raha hu," you know, all of that. Don't give me gyan. Right? That would have been the, that's okay. What to your point, 0 to 1, 1 to 10 and 10 to, that's where I think we have gone wrong. What has happened is we have gone from 0 to 10 very fast. And then the 10 to infinity, hopefully, journey is happening. And the normal checks and balances we would have put in, and in the 1 to 10 stage, we have forgotten to put in. And to me, as a founder, I would have probably woken up to that and said, you know what, this run fast and break things is going to break my own company.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that hasn't happened. Some of the other, you know, net, there's a question around, I'm a big believer in founder-run companies. Apple, interestingly, is a great case study. Steve Jobs was asked to leave because he couldn't scale up. And then the person who scaled Apple up was Steve Jobs when he came back, right?
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, one has to recognize that sometimes the same traits that get a founder to get the company off the ground may hold the company back. Founder may not realize that. His executives may not be able to tell him that. Where will you get that input? And that's where the transition needs to start happening. And this is more around corporate governance, board of oversight. Who's the person who can hold a mirror to you and say, you know, things need to change. So net, to me, this has happened because of the good thing that companies have hyperscaled.
Yeah.
And therefore, that phase in between, nobody was focused on. You weren't focused on, I wasn't focused on. We were busy trying to help company build teams. We were busy trying to help companies raise lots of capital. We were busy in some cases trying to help companies say, ki boss, business model ko dekh lo, you know, fix the economics. And it was just so collaborative, but it was very fast-paced. And yeah. I think that's where it got lost. The 1 to 10 of the company building is where I think it slipped between the cracks.
Fair. And agree to your point, right? What we have seen in terms of growth and value creation in the last 24 months, I think everybody was so focused on that you grow at all costs, that a lot of those things were not noticed, right?
Yeah.
So bringing back to the point, right? So whose responsibility is it to essentially, now that the narrative is out, we're talking about corporate governance, who is responsible for thinking about it and fixing the broken processes? Yeah.
So, you know, at business school, you may have also done this case study. We actually at HBS had a case study on, which actually is titled Corporation versus Country. Right? How are they different, or company versus country? And you know, there is the capitalistic narrative, which I also subscribe to some extent, or to a large extent, which is a corporation is responsible to its shareholders. There is a broader narrative, which, by the way, with ESG and all of that is now becoming more important, which is a corporation is responsible to its stakeholders. And stakeholders are not just shareholders. They are your employees, there is society, right? So when you take a shareholder-only view, it's a narrower view. When you realize that a corporation has responsibility to various people it touches, you take a different view. Then you can't just absolve yourself of the responsibility. Now, who is a corporation?
In some shape and form, everyone, but in the end, it probably boils down to the decision makers who have the power to run it.
So who are the decision makers who have the power to run it?
In India, mostly it's founder run.
Founder, but board of directors, executives. So I think to say that my shareholder, and by the way, to our earlier discussion, because all our shareholder value was getting increased, maybe we lost sight of who are the other stakeholders, right? But if you have the shareholder view of the world, the executives, the founder, the board of directors, everybody can say, great, going in the right direction. By the way, in my view, that's also short term, because it will go in the wrong direction.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have a stakeholder view of the world, then it would be very different. Then people would say, are you doing this right? Are you doing that wrong? So I think that's that's the big distinction. Generally, what happens in private companies, when companies go public, you're just public, right? They say when the tide goes out, you know who's. So when companies go public, you are under every possible scrutiny. Media will be scrutinizing you. Fortunately or unfortunately, now media does it anyway, right? So I think the going in assumption is most investors have backed founders. We don't want to change founders. I mean, I'm the biggest proponent of founder-run companies. So the going in assumption is that this is being done correctly. You know, one side question on this is, I've been told before, you know, 20-30% to number sabhi log massage karte, and that's not fraud. Make no mistake, that's fraud. Okay, there is no difference between petty theft and daylight robbery when it comes to the law of it and what is right or wrong. There is no gray area. It's black and it's white. Okay. So I actually believe that, I'll give you one example which you will relate to in terms of, by the way, in criminal law, like we said, what is the definition of fraud? We said intent.
Yeah.
Intent really matters, right? And so let's take example of a B2B company. It was a funny example I was hearing from founder. And the founder said, investors will come, they want GMV.
Yes.
Once they want GMV, I'm going to get into the categories that sell the most, by definition, GMV. What sells the most? Lot of commodities. Cement will sell the most. Wood will sell the most, right? So I'll get you GMV. Then the investors will say, no, this GMV is not good enough. Show me gross margin and contribution margin.
Yes.
So then I'm going to go tell my suppliers that, you know what, give me 2% more margin and I will pay you 3 months later. So then margin has also gone up. Then the investor will say, no, no, but your working cycle, working capital cycle is going up. So there's Gochi. So what will I do? I'll start an NBFC, get finance from that NBFC on this working capital. Now the you get the picture.
Yeah.
You can take this, a smart founder can game all of this. That NBFC, by the way, you may go to, that NBFC may factor its book out to somebody else. Yes. It doesn't stop. This is how Enron happened. They had so many off balance sheet structures, nobody got to it. And I think some of the fraud that's happening in the market is that. So my point is, if you think you're doing the right thing, you should be okay. It's called, in my Goldman Sachs days, it used to be called the WSJ test, Wall Street Journal test. If this was on the front page of Wall Street Journal, are you happy with that? 90% of the time, embellishing numbers will not fall in that category. So it's very simple. It's if you're doing something for business reasons and your board knows and everybody is fine with it, that's fine. I don't think that's the case here. I think in a lot of cases, that those are not the kind of things that have been going on.
Got it. But most large companies, right, and most venture-funded large companies will have Big Four as auditors, right? Statutory auditors who are monitoring the company. So isn't their response, is it not their responsibility, and are they not already checking for some of these things?
So Dada, you know, we made one of the Big Four present to us, and I'm going to give them credit to EY and their team. What did you learn?
I think statutory audit is very different from internal audit. And I think the DNA of Big Four auditors is to do what they have been told, right? These are the checklists in statutory audit they will do.
Yeah.
But
wo DNA khali nahi hai. It's the law.
Yeah.
You know, they are CAs. They are supposed to do X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
Beyond a point, they would be going beyond, not just brief. It's not that they are not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to go inside things you're not supposed to go so, right? Huge learning for me. Because I used to have the same view. It was KPMG, Big Four, EY, Deloitte, and sab se audit ho gaya. It's all. No, they are not checking for any. So what were the practices we heard? We have put some of them down here. But what were the various types of practices we heard were happening in companies?
So before going there, I think for our viewers, right, I think when a Big Four does a statutory audit, you are essentially checking the income statement, the balance sheet, and the cash flow.
Financial statement.
Financial statement.
As per whichever standard.
Yeah.
Gap or
IPRS or whatever, right?
IFRS, yeah.
But what you will never check, obviously, is if you are claiming this is the MAU or DAO, or these are the number of users. Are they, for example, real? If it is, you are looking at the cash flow statement, you will never check where is the cash going to. Are there third party related or related transactions, right? So lot of nuances to it. Are you sort of funneling in money out of the company and funneling
siphoning
it back?
Money,
It could be siphoned either back into the company or into the promoter, right?
Yeah.
So either it's fraud or you are essentially increasing revenue or GMV by siphoning the money, right? So
that, remember, either way it's fraud.
Yeah, but different use cases and to different means.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things which the Big Four will never sort of go and audit because they were never told to.
Yeah. They were never told to by the way, I don't know, you may have been too young at the time of the Satyam fiasco. But I remember, and I may not be absolutely correct, but directionally I know it's correct. That was discovered by, that resulted in a practice of actually verifying bank cash flow statements. Until then they didn't used to. Because cash flow in and out. Then have you heard of Metas infrastructure?
No, I have not.
What is the similar? What do you think is the correlation between Satyam and Metas? Metas is Satyam spelled the other way around.
Oh, wow.
And that was the same promoters.
Wow.
Okay. And Satyam was paying Metas infrastructure. I mean, it's crazy the kind of stuff that happens, right? So you have to get into this level of detail. So, you know, bots for traffic, downloads, ratings. Bangladesh click farms. Today I heard there's a big click farm in NCR which does all of this, where their people are being paid 1 rupee. So even the app downloads, even the app ratings, they're all fake, or a lot of them can be fake. You have to go and actually analyze that. Is it computing with the rest of the data? Fake transactions, GMV, round tripping, we have discussed. GST, I'll just make one point to you. You know, sometimes we fall into this trap of the fact that GST, so the interesting thing of some of the companies that have gotten caught is they had fake revenue, they had fake supply invoices, if they had paid this GST,
they would have not been caught. Yeah.
But they didn't pay this GST. Now, if you're a low margin company, you can't afford to pay that GST because it will get caught in the cash flow.
Yeah.
But in a high margin company, I'll bet you this is still happening because your margin will look a little bit lower.
Yes. Right?
So it's just crazy to me. So net net, internal audit is what should be, is religion. Statutory audit is check the box. All companies, in my view, above a certain scale should have an internal audit function. And we'll talk about what all we should be doing.
Fair, and we will go to internal audit, but this is at least maybe a very small minority, right? Most founders are giving their entire life to building a sort of institution, and that's why they are in what they are doing, right? They have huge opportunity cost. They have left all of that. They have actually worked really hard in a domain. They're building a large company. Most founders that I talk to actually want to create wealth for their shareholders, stakeholders, their employees, right? So if I'm a founder and I'm listening to this, right, and I have all the right intentions, which I genuinely believe most founders in India do, how should I be thinking about it? Because a lot of times the founder may not be doing it. Somebody else might
be
doing it.
That's the point.
That person will bring the entire company down. Yeah. Because corruption, as we have seen, right, it can be at the grassroots level as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, but Dada, just on that point, we have had celebrated fraud cases in India, business tycoons who have run away from the country.
Yeah.
There are a lot of great businesses also. But look at the impact that fraud does, right? So I actually believe that 2-3 points. First of all, I completely agree with you. In my view, it's hard to put a percentage, but it's north of 90%, which is people are doing the right thing and the companies are being run the right way. It may be 95 to 98% where founders have the right intent. But I can't guarantee that fraud is not happening in that company. It's happened in our companies under their noses,
yeah,
without them knowing, right? So some of this, the founder should be thinking, first of all, I am here for value creation. This stuff happens and this happens. So what are my checks and balances? We've had multiple situations where this has happened. I will tell you that any such news flow about a company makes you un-IPO-able. Just the public markets are just very unforgiving on some of these standards. So what would I do? To your point, my own view is that founders are, it is fraud is sometimes, or actually a lot of times, if you told me at Bazi that boss, your company may be having fraud, or are you, I would like, for example, you as an investor came and said forensic, I would react very negatively. I would say you are accusing me of this, you are accusing me of that, you know, WTF, all of that stuff. I would not today. And interestingly, what I'm seeing, and I've put this down somewhere as a auto-governed businesses, you know, we talk a lot about experienced founders. I am finding that they are actually worried about this for their own businesses. So what is a founder's real objective? All the founders you're talking about, they want to create a very large business,
yeah, right?
When you are running so fast and when the business is scaling so fast, shit can happen. What are the corporate governance practices you have put into the place in the business such that it gets caught? I think that's the overall objective. So to me, if the intent is right at the founder level, then there's no rocket science, right? And founders should be worrying about this happening against them. Sadly, in all the companies where it's happened in our portfolio, it costs a lot of money and you know, a lot of headache for the founder and basically value destruction. So my view, that is easy. If you are a founder, you should, and you know you have the right intent, which like we said, 95 to 98% likely do, 99 might have. Don't assume that this is not happening in your company because it could be somebody else. I've seen this in procurement functions. I've seen this in HR and recruiting functions. Everywhere. Right?
Yeah.
So that's why you should want to have checks and balances. I will tell you what we discussed before a little bit, and I don't know if you've watched that. There's a series on Theranos also now out. And I can't comment on her. There's a lot, you know, it's a celebrated case and she's been convicted. But it sounded like it was always the right intent. And then the right intent, at some stage, when a product failure happened or the value creation speed and pressure was too high, what may not even have felt fraud might have felt embellishment became fraud, right? This is a trap I think founders can fall into. They can fall into a trap where you have seen such value creation, you have set yourself up, you know, because one round after another round after another round, you may discover something wrong with the business. Are you going to acknowledge it? Not fraud. You may just discover unit economics nahi ho raha. So you have gone on this trajectory, and this there I would just give my personal mentoring advice. Suck it up, and I have seen founders do that. This is not going to work. This is not scaling. I'm going to slow it down. That you know, embarrassment potentially, that recognition to say, maybe I need to slow down. I think that's where I worry, actually, that things may not go in that direction. Their corporate governance is not going to help you.
Yeah.
It has to be your own intent. If I have to value creation, then I have to do it right. And which is where a lot of these new founders and the founders we meet, everybody wants to go public. To me, that's awesome. Because you can't go public without doing all the hard work over, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, because that's where you get found out. What are the best practices? I mentioned auto-governed businesses. If a lot of the experienced founders, any business that touches regulation typically ends up being auto-governed. A lot of the NBFCs, fintechs, there's that. Off business, I think, needs credit rating, so it has to be auto-governed and stuff like that. I know that in some of our businesses, in one case, an incoming investor didn't ask for a DD. But the founder said it's important to me. Now, that DD, maybe the scope should get expanded, but that's just a great way to think about it.
Right? Yeah.
And I'll give credit to Pharmart actually overall in that regard, but a bunch of these auto-governed businesses. What are the best practices? Set up audit committee, internal audit, scope needs to be agreed with the board and key investors. This is important. CFO and finance head has to report into the audit committee. When CFO and finance head presents the findings, it is without typically the CEO in the room. This is what public companies do. And then the audit committee is supposed to present those findings to the board. How many of our companies are doing that? Very few. There are some. Again, auto-governed.
Yeah.
They're auto-governed. But but anyway, net, I'm not an expert in this. There's enough literature out there. But internal audit committee, compensation committee, and having a closed door ability to have a closed door discussion amongst the key constituents without the company executives. I think this is ABC of corporate governance.
And I also think, Avnish, to the point, it's also how you build your culture. For example, in one of our other portfolio companies, the founders come from ITC, right? Where they've learned all the right corporate governance practices. And it's a fairly early Series A, Series B stage company. On their offsite, they had a 1 hour session on that you are in a business where all of your procurement heads.
Yeah.
At all points in time, every day you will do transactions which are higher than your monthly salary.
Yeah.
This is what you should do.
This is off business.
No, this is not off business. This is WeGrow. Mm. But this is what you should do. And this is what we followed at ITC. And in ITC, even if you had one fake food bill, you were done, right?
It's a great point. Actually, I didn't mention it here. But the other big piece is just the culture and the value system. So J&J, I don't know if you guys did it in your business school, but J&J is a study where their value system and ethics are supposed to guide every decision. Right? Now, again, in the 0 to 1 to 1 to 10 to 10 to infinity, what time hi nahi mila hai. But that is actually a great point. What are our value systems? Integrity. Integrity is so easy to put down on a piece of paper. How does it impact your day-to-day decision-making? If I was a founder and I have clean intent and now I'm worried after listening to this that in my car, that's something I would
then
invest in. Really.
Build the culture and repeat it again and again till it becomes a philosophy where if someone does not do it, five people will come and stop. And that is what the ITC culture
very good.
Is, right?
Very good. Yeah, very good point.
So moving on, very quickly, any change that you think investors and board should do? Tactically now?
No, so look, I'll tell you, and I say this, I learned this from Paul Ferry actually on a different note, who's the founder of Matrix, that our business, investing business, mistakes at entry are fine. They're actually par for course. If you're not making mistakes at entry, you're likely not taking enough risk. Mistakes post entry are not okay, right? And to me, fiduciary responsibility, not putting in corporate governance, assuming other investors are doing, basically you're asleep at the wheel. To me, if somebody is an investor in a company and under their watch some of this stuff is happening, they should be taking a serious relook at their practices. So I think that's on the investor side. Second, you know some of the practices that were happening in the market. There was serious FOMO. Until that FOMO hopefully has gone away now, people would be offering up speed of closing and lack of diligence as their edge to winning the deal.
Yeah.
I mean, how much worse that can it get? And whose money are you? Is it your own money? I mean, in some cases, they are big investors in their own funds, right? So I think that has to change. Board, one of the things that gets debated, which I don't agree with, is including independent directors, is that too early? See, it's very hard to build a business as is. If I have to start managing the board also and too many people, it's just too much overhead. So 0 to 1, 1 to 10 May, their compensation committee, audit committee should come in at the right stage. Composition, you don't really need to change and get independence. That is closer to IPO. Let's get the governance practice early. What I have also seen conversely is people will get independence and assume there is governance.
Yeah,
I know at least four or five celebrated, and I don't want to be too negative about what goes on in the ecosystem, but it's the truth. Charging 1 crore per company retainer to be on the board as an independent and getting 3-4 crores in ESOP. By the way, my understanding is the new company law changed how much ESOP can be given to a director, because it's clear conflict of interest, especially independent director. But I think they are under the threshold, right? So don't assume independence, therefore it is. Make sure we are following the first principles, ABC of corporate governance.
Fair. And I think not only internals, I think hopefully now with new rounds and new investors coming in, a lot of sort of new investments, the diligence process that happens also should significantly change.
Hopefully, Dada. And I think what we should learn, and by the way, this came up, somebody mentioned it, that the board and the existing investors, technically, basis on the engagement letter you sign with the audit or the diligence firms, supposedly we have access to those reports. Or if we don't, it's a very simple request to these firms and they'll give it to us. Most of us don't ask for it, right? So I think, again, and one of our founders is... Actually, two founders have done this, and I think it's great. They told the incoming investor, first of all, they asked for the diligence report. They looked at it. Obviously, they want to make sure nothing is... But if the deal is happening, then, you know, obviously, it couldn't have been that bad. They have encouraged the incoming investor to share that with the board or the existing investor so that the future alignment is clear. I think that's a great practice, right? So I think that should also happen. We should be doing it. We should be making sure... the diligence scope that is happening for the company, it's a great opportunity for the company, the board. Again, now we are in the realm of 99% of the founders want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
In that realm of 99% of the founders want to do the right thing, we should also look at the scope of the DDs that are being put together and say, hey, why don't we ask these other questions? Founders should also be putting that and saying, you know, ask these questions so that we have a better understanding.
Fair. And on the realm of 99%, right? I think we've seen so many great companies coming out, and still, thankfully and fortunately, the noise is around a very small limited set, and in all of these cases also, it's noise, right? So there's a long way to go on that.
Yeah.
But we at least genuinely believe, right? It's very important. India is at the cusp of digital nation building. The last 2 years have been fantastic, but we need another 10, 15, 20 years of this. As you think sort of forward into the future in the next 10-12 years, you think about digital nation building, you think about how important it is to generate confidence for India in the global markets. How do you see that panning out? And in that context, right, how important is
I mean, it's critically important, right? So we as Indians love criticizing a government. Every person in the world loves criticizing their government. If there is one thing the government has done wrong, right, in India, is just this digital nation building. Everything has been right from the day, and I don't want to be political, but the fact that the notion of a digital India, the notion of startup India, the notion of lately celebrating unicorns, celebrating tech-based entrepreneurship, I mean, it is a seriously enabling environment. we better not screw it up. Because the government is also a stakeholder and they can come down with a very heavy hand. We have seen it in other markets if people go nuts with this stuff. So it is a serious, so success also comes with a lot of responsibility. And I think it's our collective responsibility not to screw it up because I, like you said, it's the 1%, right? That may be doing this. But it comes with a serious amount of responsibility. So the role of the other 99% is to make sure that the practices are such that nobody can wonder whether it's 1% or 20% in India. It should be clear that it's 1% because that 1% will be there. And if somebody wants to commit, you know, something like that, it's not avoidable. But I would say that's the net-net. Great success. Success comes with, they say great power comes with great responsibility, right? The digital entrepreneurs are becoming powerful. So with great success, success comes great responsibility. It's a collective responsibility. I am actually very optimistic. I completely agree with you that 99% are doing it for the right reasons. But let's all recognize we collectively missed a phase in developing this ecosystem. And let's fix it. It's not late at all. Great. Starting with fiscal year 22 results.
Great. Fantastic, Avnish. Great chatting on this topic. And hopefully, with this, our viewers and entrepreneurs also have probably hopefully picked up a couple of points that they can go back and implement back in their companies or their boards. Thank you so much. And
super. Thanks, Dada. Good discussion.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/matrixmoments. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.